Hitting record. Hey everyone, this is Garrett again, and welcome to another 10X Marketing Formula exclusive interview. And today I have the pleasure of hosting Noah Kagan, a friend, entrepreneur. He's a founder of Sumo, which I'm sure you've heard of, as well as AppSumo. He's number 30 at Facebook, number 4 at Mint, where he worked in growth marketing. And he's just a great guy that continues to push the edges of marketing and growth. Welcome to the show, Noah. I always think it's weird to call it a show, but welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I kind of buzzed over a bunch of different things there in your background, but maybe just for our listeners, just kind of give a little bit more of an overview. A lot of these guys are marketers, so haven't necessarily been involved in startups. So kind of talk about your background a little bit and what you're working on.
Yeah, I came out of college. I was a cubicle monkey at Intel, so I didn't really, I played with spreadsheets, and I ended up just submitting my resume to Facebook. And that kind of got me like really into the startup world. This is 10 years ago now. I'm a dinosaur in internet ages. And yeah, it's been a ride ever since. I did product management there. I did all the marketing at Mint.com when they launched. And then since then, I've started a few companies. The main ones now are AppSumo.com, which is about a million person email list. It's kind of a Groupon for geeks or daily deals or weekly deals for small business owners. And then we launched Sumo.com, which were all the tools we were using at AppSumo to grow. And so Sumo.com is mostly free email tools to grow your email list. And we literally, like today, it's a little hectic. We just launched BriefcaseHQ.com, which is a Netflix for software. So basically all of our tools are helping the small business owner. So the briefcase is basically like, hey, you're a small person. Like, here's the tools you're going to have to need to run your online business.
Yeah, nice. I love Sumo, guys. I think it's just a bunch of growth tools, and I think they're always kind of and for people who haven't checked out, there's all kinds of different ways to build your list, to analyze your site, and just a bunch of really cool free stuff that works for growth, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things I've gotten more interested in and excited about, and I think most marketers know it, but it's hard for us to do it, is just pick a target customer and be very strict about it. And I think everyone has these cliche lines like, yeah, target customer, yeah, double down on what's working, and all these kind of things that we know in theory,
yeah.
But in reality, it's hard to sacrifice. But I've seen, you know, really interesting results from us by, you know, picking more specific customers as we've continued our business.
When you say hard to sacrifice, what do you mean? Hard to sacrifice other activity?
Yeah, it's hard to sacrifice money, especially if you're a small business. It's easy to just be like, oh, yeah, I want that money. And, oh, you have money. And it's hard to say no to that. But, you know, for like Sumo.com, for instance, you know, we originally just built email tools for anyone. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years ago, we're like, oh, it's just for WordPress. And that was great because it got us a lot of growth. But it turned out the customer base is so big and so broad that it was hard to actually help people. Mm-hmm. And so recently, in the past 3 months, we've now been even more laser focused on e-commerce. And I'll tell you, man, that's like transformed our business. It makes everything easier. It's made the product better. It's made the sales team better just because everything is focused around one type of customer.
Very nice. That's pretty cool. And I think what we'll kind of dig into a little bit there is kind of how you got to that decision, because I think there's obviously a lot of experimentation and measurement that goes into it. So you said at the beginning, you've been doing this a long time. So you've been doing growth marketing and growth hacking before it was a thing, you know, before it was called growth hacking. So, I mean, how do you think about growth hacking and growth marketing? I mean, how do you define it yourself?
Yeah, I don't, you know, more and more as I've been around the internet for, I don't know, 15 years, give or take now, I don't think there's growth hacking. Right? It's like, oh, how do I cheat the system? And you see a lot of this like on LinkedIn. How do I get these group people and I can scrape them and then do some other sneaky thing? And the way that I look at it is, number one, everything is all about number one. And that is, do you have a product or service that people want? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, nothing else matters. And I think a lot of people get confused with that. They're like, how do I fix my marketing? I'm like, you don't have a marketing problem. You have a business problem. You know, it's like, what is the problem you are solving? And then the who is that customer and where are they are the easy parts. But the growth, and then so if you have something you assume that people really like or people do love it, you know, growth marketing, the way I look at it is, how are you finding channels that haven't been fully utilized or abused as an opportunity for growth? I'm sure there's a more nice, I'm trying to be politically correct, but a lot of massive growth comes from, I figured out a unique business problem and I figured out a channel that hasn't been tapped before. So what are examples of that?
Yep.
It's like Airbnb on top of Craigslist, right? So they spam the shit out of Craigslist. Facebook, it spammed mailing lists at colleges. That was a big one. You can look at PayPal on top of eBay. That was another one that happened. And so it's more of like what channels haven't been fully maximized on. You know, YouTube probably early on, same thing. Instagram earlier on. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing I think is growth hacking, which is how are you finding channels that haven't other people haven't fully utilized and you have basically first mover advantage around them?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the ones I talk about in the book is as a growth hack. It's not even necessarily always seen as a growth hack, but I'm sure you're familiar with like Groove HQ and Alex's blog where they started talking about their internal numbers and stuff. So I think that's another way to do it is just you start talking about, you know, I think there was like a journey to $100,000 in monthly revenue and just kind of opened up the kimono. But you start doing it in a way, it's a new channel, or you start doing that an existing channel in a way that no one else has tried before. You know,
exactly.
You kind of have to add a new spin to it.
Yeah, I mean, and the one thing we were talking about as we just got started was that most of these growth attempts aren't going to work. And I think people either don't realize it's not working or don't just do more of what is already working. Like most business owners I'll talk to, including myself, and I'll be like, hey, in the past 12 months, what's helped you grow your business? And they're like, oh, you know, I did outbound sales. I just reached out to 5 people a day on LinkedIn and that was growing. And I say, well, how much are you doing with that now? And they said, oh, I stopped because I heard content marketing is a thing. So now I'm blogging all the time because it's supposed to be easier. And I think a lot of times for myself, I've noticed it's just like go back to the basics and keep doing what's working.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you have, you know, along that line, you know, of finding something that works, do you have a kind of a favorite, you know, growth hack or strategy, one that you've used or one that you've seen anybody else use?
What's been interesting for us, the two things that have been that I would say is number one is our framework for how we're actually going about making attempts at seeing what new marketing channels are going to work. So I call it a proactive dashboard. I got it from my buddy Dave Hauser from grasshopper.com. And so literally every week we're going to assign a test. And the person like on the team, so the content marketing team, they have to do one email marketing test. We have a full-time promotions person. So he just has to do one new promotions test. And I think having that kind of regular routine and consistency of testing things just kind of forces us to find stuff that works. The reality is most things don't work. So almost this whole year, nothing worked. In the past, maybe 4 months, two things I've noticed have worked for us across our different business units. So LinkedIn has been a really interesting channel where, you know, I'm posting things on LinkedIn and getting like 50 to 100,000 views and like 1,000 plus clicks. And I, you know, I don't have like a super large following there. And so it was interesting to be like, oh, this is all business people. This is a newer channel. There's something happening there. So that's definitely been one of the things that, you know, that took us a bunch of times to finally find that. You know, we tried Pinterest and Quora and SEO and a lot of that stuff we didn't really get great results from. And the second stuff that I'm actually getting more and more excited about is platform marketing. And so, you know, let's take, you know, CoSchedule is a great example. You know, WordPress is a platform that you guys are marketing on top of. And so I think more people can try to think of how do they dedicate a person or a developer or just a lot of their attention to a platform where their ideal customers already are.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of opportunity around that.
That's pretty cool. So let's go back to this. So you said you guys had your proactive dashboard, right?
Yes.
So was there new tests? Was it once a week? So there's 52 different things that you tested on that spreadsheet?
Yeah. We tried a lot of different stuff.
So we're like kind of like 2 out of 52.
Yeah. Most stuff doesn't work. I mean, we've done even A/B tests across our business. So, you know, where you optimize where you put buttons and the colors and all that stuff that you read in blog posts that it sounds like everything works. And I always love sharing it, but about 86% of our technical tests just across our business over the years did not work.
Yeah.
So just to give people like, you know, positive affirmation, like if most of your tests are working, one, you're amazing. But the reality is 90% probably won't work. So you just have to go through a lot of them.
Well, and I always think about what's the risk if you're not testing at all, right? If you just kind of like picture one horse and you're riding it, if 2 out of 52 different tests, you know, that's a success rate. You know, what's the success rate of just picking one, right? Like that's a pretty big risk.
Yeah. I think what the only discouragement I would try to give people is that I think a lot of people start doing testing too soon. So they don't have a lot of money they're making or they don't have a lot of traffic. They're like, well, I got to A/B test my way to success. And I just don't think that's the way it's going to happen. I think you should do those kind of tests once you've gotten to some scale or size where like a 10% improvement will make a dramatic impact to your business.
Right. For sure. So when you're building out that dashboard, you know, how do you determine what makes it and what doesn't make it on that list?
Yeah. So it's here, I'll pull it up right now. So we have two. So we have one, you know, for sumo.com, we have one for different each unit. And the idea with the proactive dashboard, the reason I love it, is that it has to be fully controllable by you. So what does that mean? It means that you can't be dependent on anything. So most of the metrics that we're looking at as marketers are already happened. So revenue, it's already happened.
Yep.
Page views, it's already happened. And so this dashboard is solely things that each week that we have full control over. And it's a living tracking. It's a living dashboard, meaning we'll do things. And as we see that it's not impacting that secondary number or that retroactive number, we'll cancel them. So let me go through. You're going to go through a few of the ones that we have currently.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So there's three different teams on Sumo that have a proactive dashboard. So there's advertising, content, and then partnerships. And so advertising has to spend a certain amount, and that's totally controllable by us. Content team, or let me, one more. They also have to do a certain amount of ad variations. So you can run as many ad variations as you want, totally controllable by us. So, you know, I think we want to spend $7,560 a week in ads, and we want to do 5 new variations of our ads each week. And then content team, how many articles they publish, how many headline tests they run, how many email opt-in tests, how many marketing promotion tests, and how much ad spend. So the whole thing here is that everything has to be controllable by the person. And then what we do is after we do this stuff on a weekly or monthly basis, it'll be like Quora, for instance. We had to do 5 Quora posts a week. And after like 2 months, I think it was around 2 months of it, I was like, we saw 1,000 visitors from Quora. And so like, all right, that is now no longer on our proactive dashboard. Now let's try another channel for that. And so, you know, that's kind of like an ongoing living thing.
Now, is that because you weren't seeing the activity you wanted from Quora, or you just felt like you had enough to look at the test and kind of see what the long-term results would be?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's like, when do you know to stop it?
Yeah.
Some of that's subjective. You know, what we realized is that we were trying Quora and LinkedIn, and for the same amount of time, we were getting like 10 times more traffic back from LinkedIn.
Right.
So it seemed to make more sense. It's like, all right, well, this is 10 times better. And I think that's actually what marketers don't do well. And if everyone listening or reading your book, if I can recommend one thing, just think about what's one thing you can stop doing today. Not something you can add, but just, okay, well, what am I wasting my time on that's not really doing anything? You know, we had an Instagram, for instance, like we have 100,000 followers. I swear, we've made literally $0 from our Instagram account. Zero. And either we suck, which might be the case, but I don't think we totally suck. But the reality is that as marketers and business owners, it's really hard to just stop things.
Right.
But that's definitely, you know, I'm not perfect at it, but I definitely think that's something we're always working on.
No, I think that's really, really good, because I think, you know, we talk a lot about in the book, or I talk a lot about marketing plans and how, you know, they're essentially these plans of saying, okay, over the next year, these are the 5 things that we're going to do in order to be successful. And the problem is that you just run them. You just do them no matter what, whether the results are there or not. And so, and oftentimes the hardest question to answer is, well, what should we be doing instead? And if you flip that around, you just say, what do you stop doing? You kind of are forced then. Is that kind of how you think about it? Like, you're forced to fill in that gap just because, you know, well, hey, we're not going to do this. We got to fill up all this time, right? We got to try something.
Yeah. I think there's a few different ways of thinking about it, which is, you know, 4 days a week, do what works. And then 1 day a week, you can experiment. So as a marketer, you know, we have, you know, some major business units. I don't know, major, but we have businesses, you know, and 4 days a week, I work on that. And then 1 day a week, I work on OK Dork or my podcast or YouTube and, you know, just kind of my experiment days. And because it's at a quicker iteration, I can then loop those back into the main business. And so we've seen really interesting results from that. The other thing that we've done that, you know, might be helpful for other people out there is that on our agendas, on our weekly check-ins, we have a section that's like, what can we stop? And so just having that there forces us to be like, is there anything we can stop? No. All right, let's keep going. Oh, maybe there's that thing. And then we actually have some space to discuss it.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's the essence of it. If there's something you can stop doing that gives you the opportunity to put focus in better areas, you know, why not? Why wouldn't you do it? So looking at some of those things, do you have a system that you use to test and validate whether, you know, one of those ideas on your dashboard are worth continuing versus dropping? Is there something specific that you're looking for, and do you decide that before you run the test?
But no, but we probably should. We probably should have like, here's the type of outcome. And I think when we have done that, it's worked out well. It's like when we launched the giveaway, giveaways have been huge for our business. And normally we'll say, how many entries are we expecting? And we'll model it out.
Yeah.
And then we can either, one, we can improve it during it, or we can be like, all right, this was not something we want to continue doing. No, but we don't have as much of a hypothesis on every single one. There's two types of ones that we're doing. One, which is like, how do we get more traffic to the site? And so we can just see like how much traffic is coming in through UTM. And then the other types of tests we're doing are more on-site optimizations. So how do we optimize to get more email opt-ins? Mm-hmm. So those would be like a weekly test that we'll run around it.
Yep. So what is one of those, what does success look like then? You know, I guess, how do you guys know when you found something that really worked?
It just always keeps going. It never ends. So if we find something that works, then we're going to test that again. And then we're going to test something different. So it's just each week. The thing that I actually do, I don't tell the team what to test. And I don't come and be like, this is what you have to do this week. It's just like, you just have to run a test this week. And so it's just more of a mentality of like, how are we just constantly improving it?
Yeah, for sure. I love that. I think thinking about it, the iterative process is very good. So let's talk a little bit about content. I know that's been a really big piece of it. What you've done at Sumo's, what you've done at your own site, OK Dork. You know, how have you used content to grow your business? And, you know, what type of results have you seen from it?
Yeah, content's been hit or miss, I'll be honest. When I started with Mint.com back in the day, content was gigantic for us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that helped propel the business, you know, sell for $300 million. That was definitely one of the major things besides, you know, a very good product. I think one thing I would think about with content is that how can you work backwards from an audience? So how can you work backwards from like a Reddit subreddit where you can just write to those people? Or how do you write to like a certain site that you know that those people are going to come to you, or a Facebook group or whatever it is? I think too many times people are writing, throwing it out there, and then just praying.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I hope someone comes and reads this. Find me randomly on the internet. That's just not the case. You know, with AppSumo, for instance, like content has been zero. We've almost gotten zero revenue or growth from our content. While, you know, with Sumo.com, it's a significant part of our revenue. So for each business, it varies. Like, so I can't always say like, you have to write a blog and you have to do it.
Right.
I think the second thing, you know, as I said, you find an audience and then figure out what's the unique thing about what you're writing about. Because everyone writes these articles now and the bar is higher. It's like, we have an image and it's 3,000 words and there's a graph and then there's like some stupid meme images.
Yep.
And I think each person probably has to say, like, you know, one of my favorite things is like, what do you have proprietary that no one else has? Right. So what is something that you can do that no one else can do and no one can copy it? So that's generally the first thing I look at. And then, you know, kind of with that, too, it's like, what are you going to be known for? And so with the Sumo blog, you know, we've picked this thing called growth studies, Sumo growth studies, which are basically like, they're literally books. It's 80 page, insanely deep dive researched articles around how people have grown. And then we've also done some data articles, which have done well for us, which is like how much email pop-ups or what percent should you be showing a pop-up, all around, you know, growing email lists.
Yeah. Have you guys found kind of some secrets to finding that, like certain topics and angles that you're putting on your content that really work well for your target audience versus those that might just bring traffic but not really give you the results you need? I kind of call those like core topics versus a parallel topic, which gives you gives you traffic but no results.
Yeah, I kind of look at it as I think that's a great way of framing it. Another way I've kind of considered it is that there's social traffic and then there's search traffic.
Hmm.
So yeah. Some of these articles are just like these Sumo growth studies are not generally going to be searched, right? So it's Supreme Growth Studies. You know, that's one of the articles we put out recently. People probably aren't going to look for how to Supreme Grow, but it's something that you're going to get, send it to your friend, find it, send it to another friend. And then there's going to be more of like our SEO based articles, like, you know, how to pop-ups, blah, blah, blah. And so one is kind of a short-term one and one is more of a longer-term one. So that's the kind of the model that we're using today. The thing that we generally have looked at is that which articles have driven the most new signups, and those two types of topics have been the best ones for us. So major deep dive studies, data articles related to SEO, long-term stuff. And then we basically do those at least on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Very nice. So we've talked a lot about your target audience. It's come up several times and kind of what you're talking about. And before we started the recording, we were talking about a little bit. Can you kind of walk me through that journey of, you know, kind of how you got to understanding your target audience for Sumo and, you know, what that process looked like?
Yeah, it's been, man, we've been doing Sumo.com for almost 4 years. And the customer has changed a lot. So originally the customer was just us. And then it kind of has gone along with our pricing where, you know, we had, you know, basic pricing. It was just like buy it one time. And then we were like, oh, let's make it recurring. So what we did is it's pretty, I don't know, it seems simple now, or I guess in retrospect, but we basically looked at which customers churn the least and or have the highest lifetime value and or which ones have been the easiest for the sales team to talk to. And then once they get on the phone, it's an easy sale. And I think if you work backwards from that, it becomes much more obvious. So what we noticed is that we would go and try to reach, like, you know, let's say New York Times, and we would be talking to these large publishers and we'd say, hey, we'll help you grow your email list. And it was just a very hard sell because they didn't really value that as much as getting more ad revenue, more traffic.
Sure.
And then with WordPress people, like let's say a food blogger or a mom blogger, they're great, but they actually don't make as much money So for them to spend on things is hard for them to look at as an investment, because it's hard for them to get the ROI because they don't make much money.
Yep.
And so what ended up happening was, like, we're like, all right, well, which people, when we talked to them on the phone, they're just like, it's a no-brainer for them. And it ended up being e-commerce. Second tier people could be like SaaS people or info marketers. But the reality was just like, hey, we go to an e-commerce site. Hey, you sell this product. If we can double the amount of emails, you'll sell this much more product. You'll make this much more money. And they're like, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Let's do it.
Yeah. So how did that change your approach to marketing and content?
Oh, man, it changed everything. So that's a big one. And we're still working through it. So I can't, you're hearing the play-by-play as it's going, but maybe in six months or 12 months, you'll hear how it ended up working. So originally we were just like, take the blog, for instance, it was just like, get more traffic. And I think that's fine to give people that kind of goal when it correlated to more revenue or whatever the outcome you want is. So, hey, content team, this is your goal, traffic. And so they doubled or tripled the amount of traffic, but our revenue didn't double or triple. So there was a disconnect and not alignment around the business. And so as we focus more on like an e-commerce customer, we've shifted it more to how many new qualified e-commerce sites have signed up through the blog. Yeah. So, marketing qualified lead or sales qualified lead. It sounds a little too technical for me makes it take away that it's a human. But the content team has done two things. So now they're responsible for qualified signups. So not just like getting a million views. Like, I was looking at the Buffer blog. They got 1.6 million views this month and only 1,600 signups. And I was like, that just seems like a lot of work for so little people to sign up. And so I think people need to worry less about how many page views or how many, like, I got this many sessions. It's like, well, what's the quality of that? So that's number one, which is we moved them to, instead of a volume target, a quality target. And the second part is who are you writing for? So if you looked at our blog in the first 6 months of this year, it was literally all over the place. It was like, grow your email list, start a business, social shares, heat maps. And if you look at it in the past 2 months, we've 100% focused on our customer. So is this an article related to e-commerce? And if it is, we write about it. And if it's not, we don't. Or we tailor it to or we fix it so it is about e-commerce. So those have been the two major shifts as we focus our customer. I'll tell you, man, if anyone picks a customer, it's just so damn nice. It's like relaxing. You're just like, oh, I just have to serve you and make you really happy and not worry about anyone else. But it's a hard thing to do because that means you're giving up someone else.
Well, and I think one thing I'm going to try and paint a picture here a little bit is just about the learning that was required to get there, right? I think that's what's interesting to me, right? So we started out with, you guys launched Sumo.com. It's like, well, we have zero traffic. Now we just need to figure out how to get some traffic, right? Like that's A number one. You can't come out guns blazing like we're going after e-commerce because you don't know. You have no idea. It's your third or fourth iteration, right, to get there. So I always think about this traffic phase. I think it is a phase of business and marketing where you have to have it to understand, but long term, it's not going to be enough to sustain you, right?
Yeah. I mean, we started off, it's funny, I like what you say, which is like, in the beginning, I was like, just wanted anyone to use what we had. And most of our products, we were actually completely free for the first year. And so it's one of these things where I think we did a good job, like every 6 months revisiting our pricing and our customer. And, it's so funny because now when I'm talking about it, people are like, oh, he just found a customer and just, snap, picked it out. No, I mean, this took, what month are we in? We're in November. We basically started looking at which customer to choose, give or take, around March.
Yeah.
So, 9 months of like, all right, let's run pricing analysis. Let's go talk to customers on the phone. Let's talk to the sales team. Let's look at like which articles are doing really well for us and which ones aren't. And it's definitely a long process.
So what types of things did you use to make that transition, right? Like how did you look at the data? Were you just trying different audiences and seeing how they performed? Were you talking to people? What were some of the things that you tried in that 9 month period?
I mean, phone calls are great. Get on the phone. I think people, especially on internet, we hate talking to people. That's why we do internet businesses. But if you can get on the phone, like what I'll do now sometimes is when someone signs up, I just call them. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just talking to you. And their mind is blown. And you learn a lot. Like, how'd you hear about us? What are you hoping happens? So on one qualitative side, it's just like talk to a bunch of customers and you can kind of tell who's excited to give you money, who's not canceling, how they're benefiting from it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do the qualitative side. And on the quant side, I mean, it was pretty straightforward. If you look at our churn rate to LTV, the e-commerce customers have no problem paying some money. And then the churn was very little because once it's set up, it's just good to go for them. But like a mom blogger, a food blogger, or dad blogger, whatever, garden blogger, they're great. But in terms of the value that we provided, it wasn't there for them. And, right. We do have a free offering and they can use that. But in terms of the paid, like sustainability of our business, It wasn't happening. And the same thing on the super high end. Those people were canceling. At the end of the day, they'd be like, all right, we're not paying $2,000 a month for some share buttons. It's not worth it for us. And that's hard because you're like, oh, no, please don't leave me. Dad, no.
Right.
but it's like you can't serve all of them really well. And now that I'm looking forward into the market, you know, there's a lot of different everybody's got competitors. That's one thing I've definitely become much more clear on. Like every restaurant has competition. Every business has competition. And I think one of the easiest ways to win is just picking a more specific customer to serve. So if you want to be, you know, like us, we help people grow email lists, but we're on e-commerce only. And so there's probably some room like Optin Monster on the WordPress market, or there's Bounce Exchange on the super, you know, I think a ripoff expensive market. It's like $10,000 a month for some pop-ups. But, you know, and I think the more you kind of carve out those niches, it becomes easier. And you probably do it to the market that you like serving. And I like serving real businesses. I don't like serving entrepreneurs. And so that's, you know, kind of the market that we've started moving towards.
I like it. I like it a lot. So one question I have, and this is now we're going to get kind of deep, is, you know, how do you go about segmenting your audience, right, in the first place, just to really start to understand them? Because if you're just taking, right, inbound leads, people are just coming to your blog, signing up for an email list, maybe jumping in a trial. Were you guys doing that manually? Did you develop ways to automate that in any way?
We haven't done a great job of it. I know there's a lot of tools. I think people get too excited about like segmenting and doing tools way too early. Mm-hmm. But no, we haven't done a phenomenal job of that. It's just right now the sales team and the marketing team and the product team, it's pretty black and white. It's like, is this product, is this sales call, is this marketing article, is this Facebook ad, whatever it is, towards a qualified customer or not? And if it is, we do it. And if it's not, we don't. And we pretty much, I mean, we did it on pretty much pulled the ripcord right away on all those things. And I will say, though, it takes like a month to finally to actually fully adjust. And we're still, I mean, maybe not a month, maybe a few months to actually fully adjust moving towards targeting a customer. And you have to be strict because, you know, a person on our team, my team was like, hey, well, I still want to do this one ad to this person because it drove a sale. And I'm like, is it for our qualified customer or not? She said, no. I'm like, come on, let's go. So you have to be a little strict about it. And, you know, we do weekly check-ins on it to see how we're performing against the goals. But it's definitely, you know, it's a process.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said at the beginning, it's hard to say no to money, right?
God, it's hard, man, especially if you're just starting out. Like when you get big, it's easier. But what I've noticed is that almost, and this is something I say, but I feel like people don't get it, or maybe I don't get it. But every major, major company started with a very specific customer. Every major customer. Every major company did. So Google, they did like research for PhDs. Facebook, Harvard, Dell, that was just the UT campus. Microsoft, those developer tools. Everyone started super narrow and then they went wider. But that's still, we kind of lose that in the grand scheme of things.
So I like this. I think we've kind of gone full circle. We've talked a lot about, like, you know, just testing ideas. We had 2 out of 52 that worked. Now to where you've kind of used that learning, everything you've done along the way to kind of really refine and find a target customer that's going to work and it's going to help you scale. I think that's really cool. And I think that's this mindset of somebody who's combining business and marketing. It's all one system, right? And you're a founder and marketer. You do that very naturally. For somebody that's more traditional, you know, more traditional in marketing, what do you think are some of the mindset changes that they might need to make, or just ways to approach their work that will help them do that as well?
Yeah, I mean, man, I was trying to think about what I would recommend for everyone because, you know, I don't think I'm actually a great marketer, and I don't even know if I'm really that great at running businesses. I think what I've actually done really well is I find products that I just love. And then it's my responsibility to go tell the world about it. And not the world, but the right people in the world about it. And that's what I do in marketing. I'm not a genius marketer or anything. I'm like, oh, it's a cool product. Oh, that person probably needs to know about it. Now let me do whatever it takes to make that happen. I think for other people out there that want to get, you know, improve their business or marketing acumen, I think the easiest thing besides finding a product you love is just go help people one by one. I think it's a common misconception I've seen in marketing and in business where they're like, I got to scale and I'm going to spend all these Facebook ads and I got to try to figure out Reddit or I got to do content or PR or some other thing. But if you kind of come back and just go one by one, either do live chat, do phone calls, do in person, do a manual service, I think that really helps you understand the customers better, helps you understand your business better. And I think long term, that'll help you do really well. I still talk to like some of the first AppSumo customers. His name is Ruben from bidsketch.com. We talk almost every week. And it's just cool. I mean, I think sometimes with internet, you kind of disconnect that you're helping a real person. It's not just an email address or a Stripe, you know, invoice ID. So I think the more you come back to those one-on-ones, it really like builds up your skill set.
I think that's great. I think you said here's what I would take from that. And you can tell me if you agree or disagree. I would say the biggest thing there is what you said is basically, I don't know. Right. So I said, what's the mindset you have to have for growth? And you said, I don't know. I don't know all the best marketing techniques. I don't know all the best business techniques. Like, right. And I come and I approach my work as if I don't necessarily know. So I'm going to have to try a lot of different things. I'm going to have to talk to people every single week to keep me focused and to help me figure out what the next, you know, next stone on the path is. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that's funny because people, I don't know, people recognize me a little bit. I guess I have some attention and people are like, oh, you know this stuff. And I think one of the things that's helped me do well is I generally just don't know it all. And I think if you can keep that mentality of being not completely naive, but naive and humble, I think it's served me well so far. I think it'll continue. Yeah, I just keep not knowing things. Like, you know, we're working on Shopify lately. And I just like reached out to people and like, hey, can I talk to you? Or can I pay for consulting? And can you just teach me? And it's been fun. And people are like, oh, don't you know Shopify? It's like, no. And I think when people start thinking they know everything, and they know all the marketing channels or they know all the stuff that just always works, it's probably when they start losing.
Absolutely. I think that's a great summary. You know, just keep not knowing things. I think it's a great takeaway from keep not knowing things like Noah Kagan. How about we just end on that, right?
Yeah.
No, it's been really good. I think that's awesome. I love how you've kind of taken us through kind of those early traffic days into kind of focusing on a you know, very target customer and kind of doing it with that mindset of we don't necessarily know it's going to work, but we have a system and a process for figuring things out. I think as long as you have 52 things that you're going to test a year, you're going to find a few gold nuggets in there. And there's probably some good 10% wins along the way too, right? There's some sort of homepage A/B test that just worked. And it's not the big win, but it was definitely a nice improvement and step on the journey.
You know, one thing that I can give to everyone out there that's just like, it's kind of a stupid one, Garrett, but I do this a lot, is that I step on the scale. And so I think when we're feeling fat or if we've, you know, eaten a lot in a weekend or cheat meal or whatever, we're like, I'm not going to look at the scale. And I have a scale right in my bathroom and I'm always stepping on my scale. And that's the point for everyone out there is just like, if you're doing something and you do it every week and you're honest with yourself, it's almost impossible not to improve. So, you know, and that's kind of what we do with all of our metrics. And a lot of stuff doesn't work and we just keep going and keep stepping on the scale.
Absolutely love it. It's really good stuff. Thanks, Noah, for being on the show. Where can people find more out about you if they want to learn a little bit more?
Yeah, the two companies, and now three, we have a third one coming out, or I guess just born today, AppSumo.com. So if you're a small business owner and you want, you know, deals on products, check that out. Sumo.com, free tools to grow your email list. We just launched the Briefcase HQ. So a lot of this is just like me in software format, me and a bunch of people in software format. If they want to check me out on podcasts or YouTube, just search Noah Kagan. I got a podcast and YouTube channel.
Yes, awesome. Definitely follow along. Congratulations on the launch, and thanks for joining me on launch day. That's a nice surprise.
All right, boss. Well, I do have to get rocking. But yeah, let me know when this comes out and if I can help promote it in any way.
Will do. Thanks, Noah.
All right, man. See ya.
See ya.